It was a curious shout out in the middle of a Sunday night Oscar acceptance speech. Director Peter Farrelly getting his Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for the movie Green Book, dropping a torrent of names for thank yous, and then this.
Tom Katsiotis and Shinola Watches, unbelievable. They're saving Detroit.
And last fall, Kanye West talked to TMZ about his upcoming visit to Detroit to see Dan Gilbert.
I'm meeting with Dan Gilbert tomorrow, who's healing Detroit.
Which begs the questions, who gets to decide who is saving Detroit, or indeed whether Detroit is in need of saving and healing? With us is Kim Trent, a Detroit-based writer, a former journalist. She sits on the Wayne State University Board of Governors and a lifelong Detroiter. Kim, it's great to have you with us on Stateside.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you.
Kim, how did Peter Farrelly's Shinola shout-out during the Oscars land on you when you heard it?
To be honest with you, when I first heard it, I was kind of happy. I am really excited by Shinola. I was in L.A. recently, and I kind of was wandering around and stumbled upon their showroom in Los Angeles, and I really felt like it was a part of home. So I'm excited by Shinola. So my first response, frankly, was, oh, that's cool. And then the word sank in, and I realized, oh, did he just say they're saving Detroit? That's not good. But I have to admit, at first it sounded great. And then just the saving part is, you know, clearly problematic. And, you know, as a lifelong Detroiter, that's a narrative that is, you know, as you mentioned, Kanye West with the Dan Gilbert quote and many, many, many others. Detroit is kind of in the spotlight now, which is a good thing. But I think the unfortunate thing is those of us who've been here on the ground all along, saving Detroit, keeping Detroit together with shoestrings and bubblegum, you know, get ignored. And, you know, that's a very kind of frustrating feeling.
All right, let's start right on the ground level. Is Detroit in need of saving?
Well, I mean, certainly we've gone through a very rough time. I mean, we've faced bankruptcy, we faced white flight, and then followed by middle class black flight. And we're a city that definitely needed some shoring up. But I think that the shoring up kind of started at the ground level. I think that people who lived here, who stayed, who, you know, when their neighbors died or moved out, took care of abandoned homes so that they didn't, you know, drag down property values in the neighborhood, or, you know, did community gardens, or held people accountable when they were opening businesses in their neighborhoods. I mean, those are the people who saved Detroit, if there was a saving that took place. I mean, certainly, I don't think anyone who's been around here, I mean, we definitely went through a period, I would say, maybe 10 years ago, or, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, where things were pretty desperate. I mean, even as a native Detroiter who has always had tremendous hope and optimism for the city, there were times I drove through neighborhoods, particularly when the housing bubble happened, and it was pretty bad. I mean, things got pretty desperate. But I think that that's why the heroes truly are those of us who stayed through that storm. You know, and we're very happy to have the folks who are coming back and the folks who were never here who are coming. You know, it's certainly a hot destination now. I think very few people in Detroit aren't excited about having some diversity, excited about having particularly economic diversity, which is what we need the most.
Yeah. In fact, when I think about a Shinola in Midtown, a Nike store downtown on Woodward, what roles do you see big brands like that playing in the city's post-bankruptcy resurgence?
Well, I think more than anything is psychological. You know, I told the story about the other day when I was going to the gym and I realized I left my bag with my sweatpants and gym shoes at home, and I really needed to go to this class for exercise, and I worked downtown and I thought, oh, wait a minute, we have a Nike store downtown now. And, you know, for most people, that just seems like such an ordinary thing. But in a city like Detroit that had nothing, I lived in downtown Detroit for 12 years, right in the heart of downtown. You know, there was no CVS, there was no dry cleaners, there was no grocery store at all. I mean, just very ordinary kind of amenities that you would expect in any major city, we simply did not have. So there is something psychological about having access to things that other people take for granted when you've been denied it for a long time. But I think that the heart of Detroit is the people. You know, I think one of the things that people are surprised about when they visit here is just the quality of our housing stock. We have beautiful homes. We have neighborhoods that are still very strong. But yeah, I mean, I think brands like Shinola, their new hotel downtown is amazing and beautiful. Their story, their narrative about really being kind of a unique Detroit institution, even though it wasn't started by people from Detroit, it's not really organically Detroit, but it has claimed its stake as an organic Detroit destination. And, you know, I'm like, come on, let's make this happen. But I do think that there has to be an effort to respect the people who were here on the ground all along.
Indeed. It's worth noting that as soon as they got the shout out in the Oscar, Shinola came out with a statement like, well, thanks. But, you know, without the city of Detroit, there would be no Shinola that the city gave
right.
our brand life.
Which I think was very wise for them to do, because, I mean, certainly social media heated up pretty quickly after that. I mean, people were pretty offended by the statement. And then also, I think you have to also look at the context of who was delivering that message, because Peter Farrelly had just won for Green Book, which is a movie that a lot of people kind of perceived as being kind of a white savior story too. So it was kind of a double whammy. People were already irritated about Green Book, and then you had him saying, oh, and here's another great white guy who's saving black people.
So, you know, and let me ask you that, because when you think of those words saving and healing, and in these cases, they're being used about powerful white men working in a city that's 80% African-American, and you point mm-hmm. to, you know, the points that are being made about the Green Book. Why do those racial tropes, the white knight narrative, why are those persisting in 2019?
Well, I think they persist. I think it's human nature that you want to believe that people are fundamentally good. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've been thinking about with Green Book, why it kind of bugged me so much, why the movie bugged me, you know, this white knight trope. And the problem is, I think that when you examine individual, you know, someone having kind of an individual transformation, racial transformation, where they were maybe racist or prejudiced, and then kind of because of a relationship with a person of color, kind of transcended it, it puts the emphasis on individual racism when that's not really the problem. The problem is systemic racism. And it kind of absolves white folks because, you know, I think on a personal level, most white people would think that they're not racist. But I think when you start looking at systems, that's a much more difficult thing to attack. And so I think when you have a movie like Green Book that really pushes people to say, oh, we're going to solve racism one person at a time, you know, that's probably not a way that you're really going to solve racism. I mean, it really has to be, we as a society have to sit back and look at how structures are in place and systems are in place that separate people and prevent people from having opportunity. And that's a hard discussion to have. You know, someone going out and having fried chicken with someone and then form a relationship, that's easy work. That's not the hard work.
Let me circle back to wind up with Detroit. Kim, you get to say this as a lifelong Detroiter who has watched the city's narrative unfold. Who gets to decide what Detroit needs?
Well, I think the people who live here. I think the people who live, I mean, although I certainly, because I saw some pretty harsh criticisms of Shinola that I thought were unfair. You know, I definitely think Shinola's, you know, there have been some questions about the impact that Shinola really could have on the community, how many employees they really have on the ground here and that kind of thing. But, I mean, I think we should give credit to some corporate folks who are coming in and trying to provide jobs and trying to provide, I mean, it provides an economic base, which is, you know, something that Detroit has been lacking for a long time. So I think that there's that piece. But I also think that the people who are on the ground here, who have invested, who have stayed for generations, who stayed when it wasn't cute or fun, even in some cases safe, they ultimately really have to be the decision makers, and they have to be the ones who are kind of charting Detroit's future. And again, that doesn't mean that we're not accepting new people or we don't want new people to come and enjoy the energy and the momentum we're enjoying right now. But I think people need to be mindful of having respect for those who have been here and never left.
Kim Trent, writer, former journalist. She's on the Wayne State University Board of Governors. And it has been a pleasure talking with you today on Stateside. Kim, thank you so very much.
Thank you so much, Cynthia. It's such a pleasure to talk to you always.